I was hours into a hunt for new digs at the local shopping mall and losing steam fast when fate intervened.
Drumsticks, get your drumsticks!
Nutty, sweet drumstick? What luck!
One drumstick, please.
Here you go.
This is hot and made of chicken.
I want an ice-cold, creamy, crunchy drumstick sundae cone.
You and me both, buddy. But that's the vendor next door.
Drumsticks.
But that line is 3 miles long.
Oh, well. Another day, another drumstick.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Hello, hello, hello. Today's episode is a little bit of a mishmash because I have been on book tour now officially for a month. Thank you, thank you, thank you to all of you who have bought The Sicilian Inheritance and reviewed us and told your friends and family about it. We have now sold about 13,000 copies, and I'm still going. Because you know what? A book has a long life. It does, my friends. So I'm zooming into all of your book clubs. I'm traveling around the country. I'm making cannoli. I'm making Negroni. I am doing all the things. But it's great because I love this book, and I love that you love it too. Today, we have two different sections of the podcast. We have an interview that I did from the car, Driving in Cars with Joe, with my dear friend, my forever person, Glynis McNichol, the author of the upcoming book, the upcoming memoir, I'm Mostly Here to Enjoy Myself. Now, I love this book, and I don't just love it because, you know, Glynis puts me in all of her books, although I do like being a character in Glynis's life and her memoirs, but I love it because it talks about women and passion and freedom and agency and just also going to Paris and eating all of the cheese and drinking all the wine and doing it with some sexy Parisian dudes. You know, that's my kind of book. That's the kind of book that I want to be reading right now. I really do. Glynis was up in the Catskills with me and two children, and she was giving me the rundown on two things. One, she has been taking advice from Gwyneth Paltrow, who, look, I mean, I want to look like Gwyneth looks in 10 years, so I'll take all that advice. But she is taking advice about how to sleep better, and it involves something that is banana crazy pants. Taping your mouth shut. Yes, taping your freaking mouth shut, friends. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about all of the good French, like, face creams and sunscreens. The things that you need to be buying in a French pharmacy for way cheaper than you can get them here in the States, and also why you shouldn't be buying them on Amazon. And then in the second part of this episode, we are talking to my friend, the journalist and novelist Sheila Marikar, about her new novel, Friends in Napa, and this phenomenon that I've been seeing in fiction where influencer is the new job in a lot of books. It used to be lady journalist, ad executive. And now there's an influencer in half of the novels that I read. Like, is this going to become a thing? Is influencer just going to be the only job that women have in books going forward? Because I certainly hope not. But first, let's talk about taping your mouth shut with Glynis. Welcome to Driving in Cars with Joe. Today's guest is Glynis McNichol.
Good morning from the Catskills.
We are driving from Westkill in the Catskills to Kingston, New York, where I will be in conversation with Virginia Soul Smith at Rough Draft Bookstore.
Not just in conversation. There's going to also be a demonstration.
I shall be making cannoli for the fine folks at Rough Draft. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got two kids in the car. I'm driving. Glynn is shotgun. And one thing that I want to ask Glynis about is the fact...
whoever you are.
That is Charlie Astor.
That's one of the children.
I want to ask Glynis why she has been taping her mouth shut to sleep at night.
Oh, I mean, really the best discovery I've made in a long time. And I have to credit, and I say this with some effort, Gwyneth Paltrow. which I want listeners to understand is a measure of my desperation to get a good night's sleep, which I have not had in years.
And you don't sleep.
Like, and even when I'm asleep, it's not a refreshing sleep.
Yeah.
And as listeners who are in their 40s likely know by this point, anything that goes wrong with your body usually results in the doctor saying to you, oh, it might just be your age.
You're just old. You're just old.
Yeah. And then it becomes a, don't want to take Ambien every night. That should be emergency or jet lag, in my opinion. And then they say, well, here's this medicine where the side effect is it makes you sleepy. And here's this. And I went to get a sleep study for sleep apnea. And my insurance company was like, that'll cost $6,000. So anyways, I'm just emphasizing the state of desperation that must occur before I will take Gwyneth Paltrow's advice on health issues. But I was reading the Goop newsletter, as I do. And I remember a friend of mine once said, you can always tell someone who lived in New York in the late 90s by how deeply obsessed with Gwyneth Paltrow they are, because she was so everywhere.
Everywhere.
Anyway, I was reading Goop, and she...
Stop banging on things.
She wrote that she had this mouth tape that she recommended because it forces you to breathe through your nose, and for mild sleep apnea, which possibly is what I have, we don't know, it really helps. And I Googled this, and it turns out more than just Gwyneth says this.
It's not just Gwyneth, okay?
There are not enough studies for a scientist to say it, but there's enough places that say it that aren't just advertisements. So I tried it, and I have got to say, my body felt like it was in shock, because I think it's the first... And when I say good night's sleep, I mean, I think I averaged 5 hours of bad sleep, so I think I had, like, in that 5 hours, like, a solid 90 minutes of deep sleep.
That's great.
And yeah, and it was like one of those, you know, where you see the plant being watered and it blooms. I mean, truly, it is truly, it was like, and then I did it a couple nights in a row and I continued to feel like I was on drugs because my brain has rested slightly.
So you tape your mouth shut is what you do.
So it's like a gentle mask. It's like a gentle fabric tape.
Okay.
The thing I will say is, because I'm never without less than 4 different types of cream on my face, you can't put it around your lips because it won't stick. Mm-hmm. But it's like an H, like it comes in like an H shape.
Charles Astor.
Yeah, Charles Astor has not taped his mouth shut. He's maybe a dinosaur. Yeah,
that would be illegal, probably, taping children's mouth shuts.
You can't.
Sadly. Do you look like Hannibal Lecter?
I think I must look like Hannibal Lecter. And also I sleep with a sleep mask. Like, it really, at this point, getting to sleep at age 49 3/4 is a measure of, like, wrapping your body. It's like swaddling your head, basically, in any number of ways.
Yeah, you're swaddling your head.
This is how, and it happens slowly, so that at the end of your 40s, you realize, like, by the, you're going to bed with, like, a noise, white noise machine on, and an eye mask on, and earplugs sometimes. And I mean, this is all.
A baby. You're essentially a baby.
I'm essentially a baby.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, obviously I don't have small kids in the house because you can't do that. You can't buffer yourself from every last shred of distraction when you need to be heard. But man, it is wild. Sleep is a drug.
Sleep is the most important thing we do. I prioritize sleep over almost everything else. And I say this all the time. This is why Nick gets up in the middle of the night and not me, because he's a better sleeper than I am, which means he will fall right back to sleep and I will not if I get up. And also the kids want me more. So if Nick walks in that room, they're like, oh, it's just you. But if I walk in, they're like, is it time to cuddle? And can you explain to me exactly how 9/11 happened?
Right. All the fun middle of the night conversations.
Yeah.
I also will say I'm a morning writer, and so I remember a doctor saying to me, oh, well, why can't you just write at night? And I thought, well, this is not helpful, because no, I'm like, my brain, if I had to under duress, I could. But so it really was, you know, the impact of it. Anyway, let me tell you, mouth tape, that you can find on Goop, but I think I might've actually ordered off Amazon. So I don't know which of those is the less devilish decision. Anyway, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well, can you... All right, so you also just got back from Paris.
Yes.
You were there. Your new book is set in Paris, where... oh, we've got kids in the car, but, you know, you guys all know what it's about.
You've seen Hedonism.
Hedonism. You've seen the cover.
The cover looks like Charlie's view out the New York hotel window from the other night.
It does. Yeah, so we were in a hotel in New York, and we were on the 24th floor, and, you know, I was telling Charlie, I'm like, when I lived in New York, I closed my blinds all the time, because someone is always watching, and, you know, the kids were, like, looking out the window, and they're like, there's the bridge, there's a Chinese bank, and there's a butt. There's a butt again.
That's right, baby.
Butts.
Weekend in New York City.
You just see all the butts, and there's a butt on the cover of Glynis's
book. Also a butt on the back on the cover of my... Oh, the Phoenicia Diner.
Phoenicia Diner is packed, man. Charlie, I just don't, hey, noisemaker back there. You just got back from Paris. You brought me a bunch of skincare. Charlie, please stop banging, lovey. Brought me a bunch of skincare stuff. Uh-huh. What of the French pharmacy products, what is good? And, like, what is worth ordering if you're not going to Paris? Or if you're going to Paris, what should you pick up?
So, in my newsletter, Good Decisions, I wrote about this maybe last month, so you can probably find it. Yes, Charlie? We're going to get something to eat.
We're going to get breakfast, but there's also, would you like a cereal bar? Okay, well then we're going to get breakfast. You can't have chips right now. No, absolutely not. Oh, okay.
I think we ate all the chips, sweetheart.
And he knows there's Doritos, but I don't want Doritos in the car because they smell like feet.
Doritos before noon.
They
smell like feet.
Yeah, and also Doritos before noon is not a good decision.
It's disgusting. Okay.
The number one thing you should always buy in France at a pharmacy is
croissants.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Is sunblock, because American sunblock laws are 25 years behind, and I'm hardly the first person to note this. I think even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is trying to push it through Congress that the FDA is holding quarter of a century of research back.
Wow.
Yeah, so you should never use American sunblock. It is really, you're not doing yourself any favors. Anyways, when you go to France, has progressive, also Canada. So that's the first thing you should buy is sunblock. I get A313, which I believe is also way back in the day from Gwyneth, but it's like a mild retinol.
Yeah.
Vitamin A, and you get it at the pharmacy. You have to ask the pharmacist. It's 13 euro. And then Patika night oil.
I pay $26 to buy it from Amazon.
Oh, I never, you know, buying French products off of Amazon is hit and miss, because they sometimes, what's up there is expired.
Really?
Yeah. I try to avoid, under desperation I will, but I largely try to avoid buying anything off Amazon, because the quality of it is not necessarily. And then Patika night oil, which is expensive and delicious.
Okay. Patika night oil?
Yeah.
What do you do with it?
So here's the thing with oils, is that if it's a serum, you can put it on first. But if it's an oil, if it has any actual oils in it, you want to put that on last, because it seals in as opposed to becoming a barrier, because it's a barrier.
Right.
So you don't want to put it on before your skin cream. I put it on after I've put on whatever else is going on my face that night, which is always more than one thing.
Yeah. And then you tape your mouth shut.
And then I tape my mouth shut, put my eye mask on.
And swaddle yourself like
possibly
a baby.
Some earplugs, and I have expensive flannel shirt. I have the most. I went on, what's the Times recommender?
Wirecutter.
I went on Wirecutter and found the most expensive flannel sheets, and that was my Christmas present to myself. So,
because sleep matters.
Sleep matters. I want to feel like I'm sleeping in velvet.
Yeah. All right. I think that's good. Thank you for listening to Driving in Cars with Joe.
Thank you for enjoying yourself.
You deserve it.
Okay. Time for a quick break. Be right back.
Once upon a time, Goldilocks discovered some delicious iced coffee in someone else's home.
This Dunkin' Cold is just right. And this Dunkin' Cold is just right. And this Dunkin' Cold is just right.
She sipped on and on, blissfully unaware that the bear stood watching.
Barry, say something.
Roar.
Was that good?
The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
And we are back. Now, I read a lot of books. I do. And recently, in the past 2 years recently, I've been noticing that so many female characters in fiction are influencers. And I don't know if I like it. And I like to have some influencers, but I just wish that we had a wider variety of jobs for women in novels. I've been getting asked a lot on the Sicilian Inheritance book tour why I chose to make one of my main characters, Sarah, a butcher. And people are kind of shocked. They're like, a lady butcher? And I was like, yeah, because we don't see enough women doing jobs in books that involve a lot of physical labor. And being a butcher is very physical. It is very hands-on. I mean, I did it because I wanted someone who truly loves and adores food. Now, I enjoyed the influencer character in Sheila's new novel, Friends in Napa, but I will say that influencer characters can get kind of tiresome, because how do you make a character come alive when they're constantly screwing around on their phones? And I don't know if I want to see more influencers in more novels. I don't. So I want to talk to Sheila about that today, because Sheila isn't just a novelist. She's also a great journalist. She writes for The New Yorker. So fancy. The New York Times. All the places. All the fancy places that, like, so often don't want me to write for them. So we're going to talk to Sheila today about why she chose to have an influencer character and if she thinks this is going to become just bigger and bigger and more of a trend. So I stayed up for the past few nights reading your new novel, Friends in Napa. I want to preface this by saying that at this point in my life, I'm not one of those people that loves to read about rich people, because I'm just like, fuck you guys and your fucking non-existent problems. But I loved this book. I stayed up too late reading it, so I've been tired. You do such a good job of creating very compelling characters in a very rich and kind of psychotic world. And what I want to talk about today is, this is something that I've been noticing for a while now. There are characters, like, there are careers that characters have had in commercial fiction for a very long time. We saw so many lady magazine writers in both fiction and in rom-coms, right? Like, everyone was a magazine writer. But now, and I read a lot. I probably read about one book a week, either if I'm blurbing it or I try to read for fun as much as I can. I am seeing so many more characters that are influencers or aspiring influencers. And there are characters in your book. There's two characters, actually, that are influencers. And there's so much that happens in this book on social media, within comments and within messages. And so I just want to talk to you about this shift towards, now we really are writing so much social media into our books. Is it unavoidable these days?
Yeah, what a great question. And first, I want to thank you for staying up late and reading Friends in Napa. That is the highest compliment, is when someone has been in bed with your book and says that they just wanted to keep reading, even though they knew it was better for them to get their quality sleep, because we all know how sleep is, like, the newest luxury product that rich people somehow manage to get because someone else is watching their kids and taking care of their house that they can sleep for 9 hours a night and be wonderful. Anyway, thank you for reading it. And then, yeah, you know, influencers, what you were saying about the golden age of the, what were they called? Editrix?
All of the magazine editors. I mean, I'm like, how to lose a guy in 10 days, 13 going on 30. But then, or people that worked in publishing, people who wrote books loved to write characters in publishing. So like Bridget Jones, right? So many of Jane Green's novels had magazine editors as main characters. Also, Jennifer Weiner's books had a lot of journalists and writers, and now her recent books have had influencers.
Yeah, you know, I think there are a couple things happening. Well, one is that as writers, of course, one thing that we all know quite well, and you and I have worked in news media for a good chunk of our careers, we know what it's like to be in a newsroom. We know what the machinations of something like a big media company or a publishing house would be like. So it's kind of, it's not easy exactly, but it's, you write what you know, and you can put characters in settings that maybe mirror things that you've gone through before. And I think what's happening with influencers showing up in fiction now is that we are all being forced to be influencers of some sort, right? Like, we are our own personal brands. If we're not on Instagram or TikTok or whatever social media platform it is telling people to buy the book, order the thing, read this thing I wrote. Let me also be charming and witty and let you into my life, but not so much that I don't have any privacy. We're all doing the influencer thing in some way or another. So I think that it's just another extension of something that many writers are quite familiar with and maybe have a fraught relationship with. I know that I've gone through spells where I'm very eager and happy to share all about my life online, work, professional, personal, all of it. And then there are times where it just feels like, why am I putting all of this content out there for free for what exactly? Like, where is this getting me? This is draining my creative energy. Why am I doing it? And it's fascinating to think about for me what someone who has many, many more followers whose entire bread and butter is coming from them talking about things they supposedly like, what kind of headspace that person must be in right now. It can really be a minefield.
Of course it is. Of course it is. And I look, as a person who has a podcast that really focuses on the world of influencing, I'm clearly fascinated between the public persona of influencers and their private lives. And I think one of the things that's very attractive to writers is that smoke and mirrors aspect, that influencers are presenting themselves one way to their audience on social media. But as an author, you kind of get to imagine the messiness behind the scenes.
Absolutely. There's a character in Friends in Napa, Rachel, who is she an influencer? She certainly wants to be. She's not really, she doesn't have the clout that other people who are, you know, big eye influencers have. But the notion that she's kind of taking time out of her day and she should be doing other things, she really doesn't even, she's very unhappy in her own life for a number of reasons, but the notion that, oh, if I can just like angle my body this way and take this picture and then get these likes, maybe that'll make me feel an ounce better. And perversely, what starts to happen is that the more likes she gets, the worse she ends up feeling. I think that there's a point at which that kind of disingenuousness, anyone who is pretending to be something on the outside and really the opposite within, it's going to come to a head. It's just going to bubble over and burst. And as a writer, yeah, that's a really, really fertile ground for exploring some pretty wild thing that could happen.
It really is. And yeah, I think it must be exhausting. I have never tried to be anything online other than what I am if you were to sit down and have a beer with me in real life, probably to my detriment because I say some crazy ass stuff online and show pictures of my body that some people don't like. And, you know, but at the end of the day, I'm also like, it must be so exhausting to be two different people because being me generally is exhausting. So to have to be like this other kind of perfect person has to be so hard. And you have two characters in Friends in Napa who are trying to project a social influencer persona. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, Friends in Napa, I like so many other people, love The White Lotus in the sense that I love settings where the people should be happy. They're in a beautiful resort-like environment. In this case, it's in the Napa Valley, Northern California's wine country. They're at a beautiful estate, rolling vineyards, shining sun. It's the middle of summer. There's a pool. There's bocce ball. It's got all the makings of a excellent weekend with friends. And it's a group of college friends reuniting. They're all doing kind of, from the outside, it seems like they're doing well enough in life that this should be an occasion to just, you know, reclaim the 20-something versions of themselves and just have a great time with old friends, drink some fabulous wine and have this wonderful weekend. But instead, they're all six of the characters that the book focuses on are reeling in one way or another. Their marriages are falling apart. Their jobs aren't panning out the way that they thought they would. The kind of grudges that they used to have in their 20s are still there, simmering and just kind of waiting for the, you know, gasoline that alcohol ends up becoming after you've had enough of it and you start, you know, rehashing disagreements that you may have had with your friends in your 20s. And things get really tense to the point that one of the characters ends up dead. And we have to figure out, you have to wait until the end to figure out why it happened, who it was, and how the rest of the friends are going to come out of this together.
Yeah, I love a book that starts with a dead body. Mike White, who did White Lotus, actually said this in an interview, and I'm going to butcher it, but he's like, if you start with a dead body, you can do anything afterwards, and people are still going to be with you to find out what happened to that body. And I'm like, you're so right, Mike White.
It's so true. And I heard that same interview, and it's absolutely true. I mean, look, if it's a conceit that's been used frequently through literature and television and film, there's a reason for it, because people want to know what happens. And I just thought that was a great way to hook readers I'm sure that you feel this too. As a writer, you want to be really interested in seeing what happens. And in the process of writing this, I did a kind of rough outline, and I had a sense of what I wanted to have happen, but you never really know how these characters are going to change and surprise you. And it's like, could it be that, oh, this person has a grudge against that person? Like, maybe they're the culprit. Like, it's really fun to sort of have that, the altered, one of the worst possible things that could happen, having that entry point into a perversely beautiful scene and then letting it go on a ride of seeing how it's all going to play out.
Yeah, exactly. What's going to happen next? And you have your dead body in like a beautiful winery building in Napa. I mean, yeah, of course we're going to want to find out what happens next. And I love what you just said about, you know, kind of writing things that you want to read. That's where I was at with Sicilian Inheritance. And I also really love what you said about how you don't know what is going to happen to your characters, because characters are kind of like witchy magic in your head. I knew how Sicilian Inheritance was going to start, and I knew kind of what was going to happen at the end. But I was mostly like, get your butt in the chair. And then the magic really did happen. I have this one character in the book called Juicy,
And she's the best character I've ever written. She's so fucking cool. And I had no idea she was going to exist. She wrote herself into my life. She was just like, it's like Juicy was somewhere in the ether. And she's like, I am a badass bitch coming in hot. And I have main character energy in your book. You don't know it yet, but here I fucking come.
It is the best when that happens.
Time for a quick break.
When we get back, we're going to talk just a little bit more about writing the job of the influencer. And then I want to hear from Sheila about the kinds of comments that she gets when she writes pieces for the New York Times and the New Yorker about women.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track. We care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Are influencers just going to become like a job that is written about, that's written about and that's also on TV shows? I mean, have they now, are they fully in the mainstream enough that this is it? We're now influencer is just a thing that we're constantly going to see in everything we read and everything we watch on TV.
I think until, you know, I think about the term mommy blogger, which
is a word I hate,
Totally. Hate it. Yeah. Detest it. But I think in the 2010s, that was what that, you know, now you would call them influencers, like Ballerina Farm, you are so great at chronicling the vast landscape of mothers who are also incredibly online and monetizing the act of being a mother in a variety of ways. But all of these women would have been called mommy bloggers if, you know, we were 20 years ago. And, you know, that whole, the bloggers evolved into the influencers. And I am both eager to see and also slightly terrified about what's going to happen after influencing. Like, I was talking with a friend recently who was saying that they see Instagram, like, sort of tipping into the Facebook sort of, like, okay, this Instagram is far from being, like, the latest hot thing. Like, TikTok is really popular. That is taking off with a younger generation. But what's going to happen when Instagram totally loses any cool factor and something else moves in? Or is there going to be... what's going to happen next? I think that consumers are also pretty savvy at this point in knowing when someone is advertising something because they're getting a check, which more power to you. We all have to figure out how to make it in this economy. But there's a difference between that and genuinely liking something and recommending it. And as sort of the lines blur between commerce and what you're actually personally, what you like and what you would just do if you weren't getting paid to do it, I think that's going to inevitably force the influencer industry to evolve. And I don't know what kind of characters we'll be having in our books in 10 or 20 years, but I'm sure there's still going to be total mess.
Totally. Like there's never going to be a lack of hot messes in fiction, because hot messes make for a good story, my friends. They do. You're never going to read the book of, like, let me tell you about the person whose marriage is, like, just really nice and they have really, really good vanilla sex, like, once a week. And sometimes they bicker over the fact that the husband only likes fancy pour-over coffee and the wife really just wants a Mr. Coffee. I just want a fucking Mr. Coffee, Nick Astor. Just can hate your fancy pour-over coffee. Which I just like to try to get that in there all the time. No one wants to read normal people having a happy, normal life. They don't.
They don't, which also makes me, I just don't understand that the comments or the reviews sometimes on, which I did see with my first book, The Goddess Effect, and I've seen it even on stories that I've written for the New York Times or for other publications that allow online commenting, where people are mad about especially women doing something, either cheating or, I think it's adultery, obviously, murder, obviously. But when you're talking about fictional characters, yeah, they're not going to be good people. These are not going to be people that you would necessarily want to be friends with or invite over to your home. Like, no one wants to read about well-adjusted, happy people. It's not like morals just like kind of get in the way of a good story. And I'm not really sure why. I don't know who these readers are that just want their values affirmed to them by whatever they're reading. I'm certainly not creating anything for them. It's not.
I want to read about crazy people doing crazy shit is what I want to read about. I do. That actually, you just brought up something else I wanted to ask you. You write a lot for really great, very high-end reputable publications. Are the comments sometimes gonzo? Do you get gonzo comments when you write, especially when you write about women?
Oh, yeah. Especially when I write about women. And I get, you know, I write for The New Yorker, which does not have a commenting function. but sometimes people will find me on Instagram or will go through my website and contact me through my email and send really awful things. Yeah. Yeah. They are. I remember when I had profiled Uber's new head of marketing, which is like probably 10 years ago, who at the time she was a Black woman and she had a really incredible story. And I got some really awful, hateful comments from absolute strangers on that story who were just I can't understand what has to be going through someone's head to, number one, post any of that vitriol online, let alone go out of their way to actually email an author and say, I really hated that you spotlit this person. It's terrible. You did something wrong. I don't know what it speaks to. Trolls, the fact that people think they can say whatever they want online and not have any consequences, a lack of decorum, just general misogyny. It's terrible, but one of the first things that I was told when I started my career in journalism was don't read the comments. And sometimes I'm good at it. A lot of times I do read them.
I'm pretty bad at not reading the comments. And to be honest, comments make me feel like shit. I wrote about that today. When people post nasty things on my Instagram or on my newsletters or on the stories that I write for more mainstream publications, it always burns. It does. I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe I am a terrible person. Like, comments suck. And it's tough to have a thick skin. I do not read my book reviews anymore. My co-writer, smart, Christine, reads them. I don't. I just like, that is almost too personal. That is like someone just stabbing me in my soft belly.
I quickly learned with The Goddess Effect not to read reviews. And that said, if I see a five star, I'm like, do I want to click on that? But yeah, I have author friends that say, look, if you read the five stars, you have to read the one stars. I don't think that's true. Because
I don't think that's true. No.
Yeah.
No. I also, you know, with podcasts too, people are much more likely to write a review when they hate something than when they like something. And I know this is true because I never write reviews, which is terrible. People have to remind me to write reviews. And I love so many books and I don't write enough reviews. But we get a lot of one-star reviews for Under the Influence from someone that's like, you clearly hate conservatives. And I'm like, none of that is true. But I mean, like, you obviously like feel very strongly about that. And so you wanted to give me a one-star review. You're not like, no one ever gives reviews to be like, I loved this and it just made me feel nice.
No, they don't. They don't. And it's the same thing with restaurants or with, actually, there's a Valvoline, like the instant, the 15-minute oil change place that's down the street from me in Los Angeles that has such good customer service that I felt the need to go on Google after the first time I went there and actually write a positive glowing review saying that like I had excellent service here. There was no wait time. It was just a really pleasant experience when I was gearing myself up for something horrible. And I would like to think that, you know, karmically, if we can put more lovely reviews of things into the world, then maybe it'll kind of balance out all the absolutely uncalled for one star, zero star, like not everything is for everyone. And I think that's another thing that, especially with books, you know, sometimes people pick up something, they picked up The Goddess Effect or they've given it a try and it wasn't their normal genre. And they even say that in the review, this isn't something I would normally read. I didn't like it. Like, well, I'm not going to go to I'm not super into wrestling. I'm not going to go to like a WWE SmackDown and then be like, this is horrible. No one should watch this. This is just absolutely terrible. It's people have to figure out what they like and do more of that and not bring down people who are into something different and just expressing themselves in a way that's perfectly fine.
That's perfectly fine. Exactly. Exactly. That's such a good way of putting it. I agree. Let's just build people up instead of breaking them down. And by people, I mean people and not influencer brands, because it is perfectly okay to do a media criticism of an influencer brand. Just putting that out there. I got it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. No. Look, there is a time and place for the sort of artful critique that you do really well of these brands that are the lifestyles that, you know, kind of they masquerade as lifestyles, but they're actually a brand. The notion that, okay, this person has such a beautiful quote unquote beautiful, looks nice on the grid. They have this life, and how do I get a piece of that? Oh, look, they're selling a farmer's market tote. Oh, they've got a candle. They've got milk. They've got all these things that I can buy, and maybe I can make my own life look a little bit more like theirs. That's a company. Just like anything, you know, it's like The Gap or something.
You're The Gap, okay? That's what it is. You're the freaking Gap, guys.
You're The Gap, and if you don't like the way The Gap's jeans fit, you can, you know.
You can return them. Or not follow the Gap, okay? Not follow the Gap.
Shop elsewhere.
Will you tell everyone where they can find you on the social medias and also how they can order your book, which is from Mindy Kaling's studio, which is so fucking cool.
I'm so thrilled that Mindy Kaling picked it up for her book studio. She's got her own publishing imprint, and it's pretty fabulous. It's definitely to have her seal of approval, literal seal on the cover of the book. It's still
Mindy's name is on the cover of your book. That is really cool.
She wrote the foreword, and I could not be happier about that. All the link is in my Instagram bio, which is the only social media platform that I'm very consistently on. My name there is Sheila YM. And that's the same name that I have on all of social media, although I'm not really on Twitter or X anymore because it just seems like a coven of ads and hate. And yeah, I'm trying to avoid that.
Okay, that's all we've got for today.
Thank you so much for joining us. I love all of you. I really do. I just appreciate the hell out of everyone these days. It's been rough. I've been tired. I took a little breather. I went to Puerto Rico. I feel good. I feel good and I feel energized. And I think we're going to make The Sicilian Inheritance the book of the summer. I do. I do. We just have to keep saying it. We do. Sicilian Inheritance. It's the book of the summer. If you haven't gotten it, pick it up. It makes a great Mother's Day present. It really does. And a lot of people are telling me that they are buddy reading with their moms, which I love so much. So if you already have a copy, grab a copy for your mom. Why not? We talk about motherhood so much in the book that I think it will lead you to ask your mom questions about being a mom that maybe you've never asked her before, which I love. Now go have a good day. Do something nice for yourself. Do something nice for someone else. And maybe tell one of your friends that she's a good mom, because we all need to hear that. Someone said that to me yesterday and I just cried because, yeah, I needed it. Okay, bye guys.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.